Poet Emmy Mahmoud was born in Darfur in Western Sudan, but moved to the US at just 4 years of age to escape the war in the region. In 2015, she performed at the Individual World Poetry Slam Championship in Washington, D.C., with a poem she had written just hours before about her mother, but as she's just told me here in the studio during that outbreak, dedicated to her grandmother and all of the great women in her life. She won the competition in 2015 with that poem, and I'm delighted that Emmy is with me in studio now. Let's go back to that Darfur, because I said at the very beginning of the programme this evening, Emmy, yeah, I refer to you as a Darfuri poet.
Yeah, it's interesting actually. I'm Sudanese American and Darfuri American. I was actually born in Khartoum, which is the capital of Sudan. My family's from Darfur.
Which the rest of us would just say Khartoum.
But yeah, I know.
Say it again in the correct way.
Khartoum.
That's a brilliant pronunciation.
And it's, you know, we moved to Yemen when I was one. We escaped to Yemen, actually, when I was one. So I don't remember much of that. Mm. But I do remember Yemen. And I remember leaving to the States when I was four.
So. And when did you find it? Because I suppose the war in Darfur, 2003, is generally a point at which people would put down as the historical.
Classified as genocide. Yeah,
yeah, that was when that came to the fore. So at what point did your family decide to leave?
My family left very early, in 94, actually, because even before that, Sudan has been in turmoil and at war for a very long time. And I like to say that, honestly, whenever we look at conflicts, especially globally, we don't notice them until the breaking point. So 2003 was the breaking point, but there were a lot of things that were set in motion before I was even born. Mm. My parents were activists, and it was just incredibly dangerous for us to stay there. And the story is pretty gruesome, but the thing that prompted us to leave was when my dad at his hospital, soldiers had brought his friend's body to him and told him that this man had died of malaria, but it was very clear that he was tortured and killed because of his advocacy. And so it was very clear, like, your next kind of situation.
So it was actually your friend's father's body was put in front of him as a warning.
A warning, yeah. They said to him, this man died of malaria. And he said, no, he did not. So my dad wouldn't play along. And so if you don't play along with the dictatorship, you're out. So
He knew it was.
It was time to
make that move. You say that you obviously we were one, so clearly you wouldn't have many memories. But what kind of memories do you have of Yemen then? Which was still only the you know, 2, 3, and 4. Not exactly. You weren't in the full of your senses just yet.
Actually, we never went back to Yemen, so my memories of Yemen are very vivid and very strong, especially because my younger sister was born in Yemen, and so my earliest memories are there of being in the hospital with my dad and being in the schools and everything. And in fact, a funny story is that I met one of my friends in preschool in Yemen that I later met when we were together as freshmen at Yale. It was very funny, yeah. Her name was Mariam, and she
I can't imagine that that's a large constituency.
No.
People who met as refugees in Yemen and then were in a freshman year together in Yale.
Yeah, so she was there with her family in in Yemen. It was very weird. My earliest memories of Sudan, however, started when I was about 7, which was the first time we went back to Sudan. And that's actually what People Like Us is about, and some other pieces.
Well, that's a perfect setup for hearing People Like Us then, isn't it? Let's have Emmy Mahmoud with People Like Us.
Memories of my childhood live between the rings of sand around my ankles and the desert heat in my lungs. I still believe that nothing washes worry from tired skin better than the Nile and my grandma's hands. Every day, I go to school with the weight of dead neighbors on my shoulders. The first time I saw bomb smoke, it didn't wind and billow like the heat from the kitchen hearth, but it forced itself on the Darfur sky, smothering the sun with tears that it stole from our bodies. The worst thing about genocide isn't the hunger, the murder, the politics, the government-paid soldiers that chase you across borders and into camps. It's the silence. For 3 months, they closed the schools down because people like us are an eyesore. So the first month, we took it. The second, We waited. The third month, we met underneath the date palm trees, drinking up every second our teachers gave us, turning fruit pits into fractions. On the last day, they came with a message, put them in their place. We didn't stand a chance. Flesh was never meant to dance with silver bullets, so we prayed for the sun to come and melt daggers from our backs. I hid underneath the bed that day with four other people. 12 years later, and I can't help but wonder where my cousins hid when the soldiers torched the houses, threw the bodies in the wells. So if the weapons didn't get you, the poison would. And sometimes they didn't want to use bullets because it would cost them more than we did. What does it matter? I've seen 16 ways to stop a heart when you build nations on someone's bones. What sense does it make to break them? And one day, my mother choked on rifle smoke. My father washed the blood from his face. My uncles carried half the bodies to the hospital and the rest to the grave, and we watched. For every funeral we planned, there were 60. We couldn't have the sand, and the Sahara tastes a lot like powdered bone. And when the soldiers came, our blood on their ankles, I remember their laces, scarlet footprints on the floor. I remember waking to the sound of hushed voices in the night, etched with the kind of sorrow that turns even the loudest dreams to ash. Our parents came home with broken collarbones and a taste of fear carved into their skin, and it was impossible to believe in anything. Fear is the coldest thing in the desert, and it burns you, bows you down to half your height and owns you, and no one hears you, because what could grow in the desert anyway? Thank you.
Thank you. People Like Us from Emmy Mahmood there. The kind of descriptions that you're giving there, Emmy, where did they come from? What part of your mind, or whose words are they in some ways, I think is the question I'm asking.
Oh, you mean my poetry?
Yeah.
Well, so that's actually the opening poem in my book, Sisters Entrance. And the way that I like to say that the reason that I write and the reason that I perform are very different. I write to process and come to terms with a lot of what happened. And what's difficult about a lot of these spaces, especially in Sudan, where there was a police state for the longest time and all these different things, there is a certain level of erasure that happens. There are things that are worse than killing someone. Because I remember one of the first things that happened is that nobody believed us. And so the oral tradition and storytelling and being able to carry these stories away from home and tell people that this is what's happening and raise the alarm was the only way that we were able to prove that it happened.
So were these stories that you were told subsequent, because you were saying you have so little
memory? No, I was there, yeah.
And how was that memory awoken?
It never goes away. Right. Mm-hmm. And so the thing that's difficult is in the year, I think about 2003, my parents were going through some of the worst things, like having calls every day from family members telling them that the next village was bombed or this many people are gone. And I didn't understand it. So when my mom explained genocide to me, I was about 10 years old. So for a lot of the, you know, years that followed, a lot of the stories of what was happening in Sudan were like a part of me and were incorporated into my poetry. But People Like Us, you know, it starts out in the year 2000. I remember learning under the date palm trees. I remember the schools being shut down, the smoke in the sky, and, you know, hiding under the beds. It's like I write because it helps me come to terms with that. Things that if I don't get them out, they'll come out in a different way, you know? I've told my students in poetry that if it doesn't come out in your writing, it'll come out when you're in the coffee shop ordering coffee and there's no hazelnut and you're just like, why is there no hazelnut? But the reality is, yeah. So it's difficult, but it helps me process. And I perform because I think people need to hear it. I think that increasingly, these kinds of experiences are becoming more common around the world.
Yeah, and I wish people could they could hear the energy in your performance, but there's quite a physical side to your
definitely.
Performance
you
as well.
You perform with your arms.
Yeah,
and
your whole body is involved in what you're doing. Mama, let's hear Mama. So we know this is about your mother and for your mother rather. No, it's about your mother, but it's for all the women in your life.
Yeah, it's for all the women in my life. It's for all the women around the world. I do pray for a day where my poetry isn't no longer immediately relevant, but is a relic of history. But sadly, most of the things that I talk about are still happening everywhere right now.
Well, so I would just want to tell people, because you are going to launch into the performance now, because it's a thing
it's
to behold, to watch as well. And people can watch, but if they go to the RTE Arena website, rte.ie/arena, they'll be able to see Emmy as she performs Mama now for us.
All right. So I'm walking down the street when a man stops me and says, "Hey, yo, sister, are you from the motherland? Because my skin is a shade too dark not to have come from foreign soil. Because this garment on my head screams Africa. Because my body is a beacon calling everyone to come flock to the motherland." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm from Sudan. Why?" He said, "Yes, you is, because you got a little bit of flavor in you. Don't get me wrong. I'm just admiring what your mama gave you." Let me tell you something about my mama. She can reduce a man to tattered flesh without so much as blinking. Her words fester beneath your skin, and the whole time, you won't be able to stop cradling her eyes, because my mama is a woman, flawless and formidable in the same step. Woman walks into a war zone and has warriors cowering at her feet. My mama holds all of us in her face, in her body, in her blood, and blood is no good once you let it loose, so she always holds us close, keeping us safe from caving in. When I was 7, my mama cradled bullets in the billows of her robes. That same night, she came home and taught me how to get gunpowder out of cotton with a bar of soap. And years later, when the soldiers held her at gunpoint and asked her who she was, she said, "I am a daughter of Adam. I am a woman. Who the hell are you?" And the last time we went home, we watched our village burn. Soldiers pouring blood from civilian skulls as if they too could turn water into wine. The woman who raised me turned and said, "Don't be scared. I'm your mother. I'm here. I won't let them through." My mama gave me conviction. Women like her inherit bruised wrists, tired eyes, and a titanium-plated spine. The daughters of widows wearing the wings of amputees, they carry countries between their shoulder blades. Now, I'm not saying that dating is a first-world problem, but these trifling motherfuckers seem to be the kind who'll quote Rumi, but not know what he sacrificed for war. Who fawn over Lupita, but turn their racial filters on. Who take their politics with a latte, when I take mine with tear gas. Every guy I meet wants me my introduction to the dark side, wants me to open up this obsidian skin and let him read every tearful page, because what survivor hasn't had her struggle made spectacle? Don't talk about the motherland unless you know that being from Africa means waking up an afterthought in this country. Don't talk about my flavor unless you know that my flavor is insurrection. It is rebellion. It is resistance. My flavor is burden. It is grit and it is compromise. And you don't know compromise till you've rebuilt your home for the third time without bricks, without mortar, without any other option. I turned to the man and said, "My mother and I don't walk the streets alone back home anymore. Back home, there are no streets to walk anymore." Thank you.
Amy Mahmood with our poem Mama. And if you don't mind my saying so, if that's a description of your mother's energy, you clearly have a large portion of it as well. Give me the title of the poetry collection as well. And is there a website
where
people
Sisters Entrance.
Sisters Entrance. And where can people find out more about you?
Oh, about me. It's emmy-mahmood.com and also on the UNHCR website.
Yeah, you're an ambassador.
But yeah, Emmy Mahmood is my website. So
Emmy Mahmood. And that's M-A-H-M-O-U-D, isn't it?
EMI-MAHMOUD. .com.
What a delight to speak to you.
Oh, and Emmy Botuta on Instagram. So
there we go.
Thank you so much.
Lovely to meet you. I hope I meet you again and have lots more time to talk.
Thank you.